Welcome on to a special Paul George extension edition of the Hollinger Duncan podcast. We are also going to go through some of our preseason disagreements. John and I are in the process of doing our preseason predictions. Not totally finalized, but we talked a little bit about where we see some of these teams and where we have some big disagreements. So we're going to get into that. You can see some of those teams we disagree on here in the rundown on the left for those watching on Twitch right now. But let's start here with the Paul George extension. John, and your thoughts on this?
I thought it was a really interesting move because basically, I mean, to me, this is still about Kawhi Leonard at the end of the day, that you make sure that you have George extended so that you can get Leonard to re-sign when he inevitably opts out of his contract at the end of the season. You're already all in with the five firsts you gave up for Paul George, which is basically, again, to get Kawhi Leonard. They will lose on this contract pretty clearly. Paul George is 30. I estimate his value for the coming season to be like roughly $30 million. And you're talking about a deal that pays him in excess of 40 in the out years, out till age 34. Like there, that the back end of this contract is definitely going to be an L for the Clippers. But they're all in for right now, basically this year, next year. And if you can get Kawhi Leonard to re-sign, then maybe, you know, it extends your window and maybe that ends up worth it at the end of the day, even if mid-decade you have some crappy teams. So that's sort of my take. I thought it was interesting. Was somebody going to give Paul George a four-year max next summer? Yeah, you probably couldn't rule it out, especially with the Knicks involved. But they really went whole hog and like gave him his max a year early, basically.
So a lot of things come to mind here. I mean, first, the Kawhi aspect of this. For those who are wondering, well, why not extend Kawhi? Is he extension eligible? How is the scandal he's not extending? Well, he only signed a 2+1. So that's not eligible to extend right now. And that was always it. He wants to get to 10 years of service next year, and then he'll be available for the 35% max. For George, this is not an overreaction, you would say, to what happened in the bubble, that he and Paul George did shoot 41% from three on a crazy number of attempts last year, and he had a pretty good season. And this team, by net rating, was the second best in the NBA last year. I think they are of the belief that they got better this year. And so, yes, you should definitely be all in. Another aspect of this, too, is that if it doesn't work out this year, I think this actually puts the Clippers in better position potentially, because they could, in theory, move Paul George. Now, you know, what team is
for Blake Griffin, John Wall, or Russell Westbrook? Sure.
Yeah. Well, I mean, are you better off? Would you rather just have the cap space? I mean, they wouldn't have had space anyway.
That's the problem. It's the bird rights trap, right? Like So you're better off having him under contract probably, because you're not going to be able to generate meaningful cap space unless him and Kawhi both leave, in which case you have cap space, but your team is dog shit, so it doesn't matter. So I would say, I think from that perspective, that's an interesting point, but it also takes things off the table for this year, right? You can't trade Paul George for James Harden anymore. He's not trade eligible until after the trade deadline now.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, still though, both my thought of trading George and yours, trades generally just don't work like that, right? Like teams aren't, like the Houston would not have been interested in Paul George as an expiring contract to be traded for James Harden, right? Like, you know, team generally you trade old for young and established player for asset. And so a player like Paul George is the type of player that a contender like the Clippers would be trying to acquire. It seems unlikely the Clippers would just do a challenge trade for some other star with some team that has good players that they're going to send back. So the idea of trading George is probably, we probably already wasted too much ink on that, frankly. But from George's standpoint, in retrospect, this probably shouldn't have been as big of a surprise as it seems to have been, because the initial reporting, you remember Paul George, it was after 8 years of service with Oklahoma City, mm-hmm. and he signs a 3+1. And a lot of people thought that was curious at the time. You know, why not sign the 2+1? That's what everyone thought. Do the same thing that Leonard is doing. Yeah. And then mm-hmm. after last season, he could have signed on for the full max 5 years at the 35% max. Instead, what the reporting was now Paul George could get an extension after, you know, because there's 3 years contracts can be extended, 2 year contracts cannot. And so mm-hmm. he can get an extension, and that's why he signed the 3+1. I always thought that was seemed like kind of specious reasoning at the time. You'd want to become a free agent earlier to lock in at the max, but that was supposedly what the plan was according to Woj. And in fact, that's the exact plan that they executed here.
Yeah. And I mean, I guess you could say he could have become a free agent last year and signed for 4 years at the 35% max, but he still got 4 years at the 35% max.
Yeah.
And he wasn't get, and I don't think that year on the back end was going to be at the 30% max. You know what I mean? Like, so yeah. I think he may have actually maximized his career earnings by doing it this way and taking out his high earning years to age 34 instead of age 33. That's an interesting point.
Yeah. And I mean, because he would have had to re-sign with wherever he was to last year and to get the 5 years. So it does seem like the plan that they laid out ended up getting executed pretty well. I mean, are you feeling like you wouldn't have done this as the Clippers, or is this the right move?
It's probably the right move given where they are. I mean,
they're already fucked in 2025 anyway, right?
Yeah.
Like, weren't they?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
So, you know,
yeah.
Why not just do it twice?
So it takes two things off the table. You don't have any worries about having to come up with a fifth year for Paul George in the summer, right? I mean,
yeah.
Which would have been nuts, but you know, he could have played hardball with him and be like, well, I'm going to go to the Knicks otherwise, you know? And then, I think it takes some of the theater out of this season in terms of Paul George and Kawhi both being able to leave if things go sideways. Now you know Paul George is locked in. I just think it makes it a much stickier place, like sticky in terms of not being able to get away for Kawhi Leonard, that Paul George is definitely staying there and they can't go someplace else as a package deal.
And George, I think, just with his size and shooting ability, and should age into at least being like still a usable player at age 34 and 35. You know, he will be massively overpaid, but you know, a solid 3-and-D wing even is going to be making $20 million a year by that point. So yeah, if he's making 40, that's not great, but it's also, you know, he's not a totally useless guy who's just going to be out of the league the way, you know, more scoring focused guys might be. Like, he has other complementary skills. So anything else you want to talk about on this one?
I mean, the other thing from the Clippers perspective, you're basically locked into being a tax team for the foreseeable future. So that's going to be interesting. There are a few million into the tax this year. I mean, once Kawhi, assuming you get Kawhi to re-sign, like I just don't see a way for them to not be a tax team going forward.
Yeah, and maybe we'll see them try to get out of the tax this year. But then again, Steve Ballmer has more money than anybody, any owner in NBA history. So he may just not care if they go into the repeater tax or not. But yeah, I mean, they will be $7 million into the tax with nine players as of next year, assuming Leonard re-signs for this same. Oh, actually, yeah, see, Leonard. Yeah, yeah, Leonard will be $39 million to start next year, also same as George, in theory. So, okay.
Yes.
I think this is a good sign for the Clippers that there's this feeling there's all this pressure this year. It could all fall apart, et cetera, et cetera. I think taking that away, especially for a team that has looked a little mentally fragile, is probably a good thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It eliminates one thing that could distract them this year, for sure.
Listeners, I want to tell you about a new offering from Sports Business Classroom, an organization that I was involved in founding. And now they are launching the CBA Mastery Course, courtesy of the Cap Father himself, Larry Kuhn, who created the first CBA FAQ way back in 1999. Nobody knows more about the CBA than Larry Kuhn. And now, for the first time, you can learn the same information that Larry has been teaching teams, agents, and executives for over 20 years at your own pace, which is awesome. All the sexy stuff is in there. Uniform player contracts, exceptions, trades, extensions, waivers, the Gilbert Arenas provision. All of it's available via on-demand video. You can get interactive exercises you can do at your own pace. There's an exclusive members-only CBA Mastery Forum, definitions of all the key CBA terms, a certificate of completion if you complete the course. You can also be included in exclusive emails promoting jobs in the industry. You get a discount on Sports Business Classroom 2021 Business of Basketball Immersive Experience in Las Vegas, subject to admission, of course. and placed on the exclusive Vegas Summer League talent profile website, accessed exclusively by sports business executives looking for job candidates. If you sign up, you can receive 10% off the price of the CBA Mastery course using the discount code CAPSPACE if you're paying in full, or CAPSPACE PP if you're playing with a payment plan. Once again, that's the discount code CAPSPACE or CAPSPACE PP for CBA Mastery at CBAMastery.com. Speaking of things that could distract a team this year, Giannis Antetokounmpo, a rather bizarre press conference yesterday.
Yes.
His comments were essentially, well, you know, I'm just trying not to let it distract me, and I'm leaving it up to my agent and the Bucks to negotiate something. It's like, I mean, is it stressful? Are you just going to say like, yeah, you know, I would have loved to stay there, but we just couldn't work out a deal. They just didn't offer me enough money.
You know, they wouldn't give us the trade kicker.
Yeah. So
it did sort of.
I'm sure that's just cliches to just try to get the media off his back. But
it only made it worse, though. Yeah.
If you're trying to spin this with rose-colored glasses for the Milwaukee Bucks, maybe you could say, well, maybe they're trying to work something out where he wouldn't take the full max or something, or like, you know, just to like give him a little more breathing space to put a team together. I mean, that's the other thing too for next year, is that if he gets the super max and they re-sign Holiday, I mean, they're going to be further into the tax than I certainly would have thought that the Milwaukee Bucks would ever go.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Between Holiday, Giannis, and Middleton, absolutely. And that's, that's before they even get into some of these other guys. Like, if Dante DiVincenzo turns out to be worth, like, a $20 million extension, like, this could be a spectacularly expensive team.
Yeah, no, it seems that way. So, I mean, it seems like he's not going to sign it, right? I mean, what, he has all the information that he's needed to make the decision. I mean, is he going to be like, oh, let's see how we look in camp and then I'm going to decide? I mean, that seems unlikely.
Yeah. Or, you know, are they trying to make some kind of decision about whether to sign short and what that might look like? Maybe, I guess. I don't know. It all seems pretty disingenuous when the 5-year Supermax is sitting out there. They've had months to figure out what they want to do if they don't take it, you know, if they would rather do a 2+1. So it all just seems a little bizarre.
Yeah. I mean, he is eligible for like a regular extension, but like, there's just no reason for him to sign it this year. Like, why not just see how this year goes?
Well, that's the thing I've always thought, is that he's better off doing it after the season, because he can sign the exact same extension after the season. And at that point, he'll have a lot more information. And in the meantime, him not signing actually gives the Bucks a better chance to win this year, because you're basically holding Miami and Toronto's rosters hostage. Right?
Yeah.
They're not going to do anything until he signs it.
That's a great point. I mean, it does seem like it's trending that way. Giannis, it could, I'm not ruling it out completely. I think Giannis, you know, has a little bit different of a mindset than some of these guys, and he may just decide that he's loyal to Milwaukee. And certainly the fact that Milwaukee gave up the amount that they did for Drew Holiday is pretty remarkable, if in fact he's not going to sign it. But you got to be concerned. Zach Lowe is saying, oh, a lot of people in Milwaukee were crowing about how he's about to sign it. And they seem to have gone dark. Seem to have gone a little dark.
Exactly. I had the same thought. And man, I mean, you don't make a deal like the Holiday deal to me without some indication that he's going to sign it. You couldn't possibly trade for James Harden there, right?
Well, it doesn't seem like,
setting aside the fact that Giannis and Harden seem to not like each other.
Well, what the hell do they have to trade? They can't trade anything. It's ridiculous. Why would Houston ever do that? They just gave up everything that they had for Drew Holiday. And then the discussion has been, well, Houston wants a Drew Holiday level of picks plus a young star. So, Dante DiVincenzo probably not getting it done. I mean, I guess Chris Middleton does Houston want Chris Middleton? I don't know what they would want with Middleton.
Yeah, I know. I mean, Middleton would be the more appropriate salary match, right? Because these other guys, they can't even put in deals for a while. So it would almost have to be Middleton in the short term.
Okay, let's hit some questions here.
Hey, let me throw another one at you.
Oh, yeah, please.
If Giannis doesn't sign and you get bad vibes that he won't sign, would you trade him straight up for Harden?
I mean, but like, why would Houston do that either?
Yeah, they'd have to have some indication that he was willing to
Yeah, which he's not going to. I mean,
willing to play for the Rockets and stay at the Golden Nugget for 41 nights a year or wherever they, whatever.
Yeah, I mean,
Fleet Mag Hotel they're staying in on the road this year.
That's like out of the frying pan into the fire when it comes to bad ownership. all right, let's see here. Questions. Got a lot more comments than questions right now. Have you looked at the win total of over-unders? Anything stand out? I've been fastidiously actually avoiding them this year as I've been doing my predictions. Danny, I'll probably do that podcast after we get at least a little bit of preseason. You know, I mean, this is one of the most, I've said this before, one of the most important preseasons, even though it's truncated, because I have no idea how Stephen Curry is going to look. I want to see how Kevin Durant's going to look. I want to see how Zion Williamson is going to look. That's a huge one.
Yeah.
Those three guys coming back from injury that really could totally change the landscape of the league.
Yeah, you know, I already filed my Pelicans preview too, and now I'm like, oh, it's either going to look it's going to look terrible one direction or the other, depending on how Zion looks in that first preseason game.
You already filed the Pelican brief on this season?
Yes.
Oh yeah.
Thank you, Mr.
On
Grish.
Twitch, baby, we are right in with these references with the Twitch demographics. Let me tell you. 1994 movies. John Grisham was once a cultural phenomenon.
You got any good jokes about MASH you want to share?
Nothing is worse than sleeping poorly. I know, because I tried a mattress company that shall remain nameless. It was one size fits all, and it didn't work. I had to return it. So then my wife found Helix Sleep. We took their 2-minute sleep quiz. It was way back in 2015. And we got a mattress that actually works for the way that we sleep. And it'll work the same for you, whether you sleep on your side, your back, your stomach, you want a soft, medium, or firm feel, you sleep too hot, you sleep too cold. There's even a Helix Plus mattress for plus size folks. You're going to love this mattress because it's made for you. And it is risk-free because you get to try it out for 100 nights and they'll pick it up for you if you don't love it. So you don't have to take my word for it. You don't have to take the word of GQ and Wired Magazine, which gave them the best overall mattress pick of 2020. And right now for our listeners, they're offering up to $200 off all mattress orders and two free pillows at helixsleep.com/PER. Easy to remember /PER because we talk about it all the time here on the program. That's helixsleep.com/PER for up to $200 off and two free pillows. Don't forget that /PER. John invented it to let them know that you came from us. I want to tell you about the best deal that Masterclass has ever offered. You can get an annual membership to Masterclass and give one to someone else for free. Perfect for the holidays. In our virtual world, maybe you can even take some of the same classes together if you want to. That's right. You can get unlimited access to every masterclass for you and a friend or loved one right now at masterclass.com/PER. Easy to remember because John invented it. Masterclass is just the absolute best way to learn from the absolute best people. It's called Masterclass for a reason. Steph Curry, Serena Williams, Alice Waters, Chris Voss on negotiations, former FBI lead hostage negotiator. Incredible actors and actresses. Incredible writers like Margaret Atwood. My wife took her class. Loved it. Tan France, co-host of Queer Eye on Style for Everyone. This is cinema quality video. Plus, you get a ton of exercises as well. Just a great, great way to learn about the world and or get serious about pursuing your dreams by starting off with these classes. Once again, it's masterclass.com/PER. That's masterclass.com/PER. All right, but in that vein, let's turn now to some disagreements. And your Warriors preview is already out. Would you care to share where you have them this year in terms of your projection?
Yes, I have them winning 35 games and losing 37 and finishing 11th in the West. So not one. Can I say how far out of the play-in game I have them? Very close to the play-in game, but not in the play-in game.
Oof. So what's your rationale on them not making the playoffs here, even with Stephen Curry back?
I think having Curry back is great. I just think the rest of the roster just isn't that good. With, you know, it's our you know, okay, Wiggins, Oubre, Green. I mean, even allowing for the fact that I think he'll be better than last year, Wiseman. Like, is that a plus group as like your 2 through 5 guys, like relative to these other teams in the West? Like, it's all right. You know, the bench is okay. I don't know. I'm not that crazy about Pascal still. I think he got to take a lot of kind of quick twos because he was playing on a bad team kind of guy. And I'm not really feeling it with him yet. The other front court guys like Chris and Looney, like, I mean, they might end up being okay. Wanamaker Baker and Lee as your backup backcourt, like, that's serviceable. But if you don't have overwhelming frontline talent like you used to, I mean, I just don't see what takes them above average, I guess. They're just an average team.
So, yeah, I mean, the two reasons that you would say, and I still have to really wrap my head around where they are, but I'm not going to have them 11th in the West, and I'm not going to have them under five. I went through and I did their, I do my tiers every year of where I think teams will rank in offense and defense. And I actually think that they can be in the 6 to 10 range defensively. That's where I think they could be better than expected. They got four guys in the starting lineup with 7 foot wingspans. Wiggins has put on some weight, which is good for him. I think, he could be a decent enough individual defender on the wing, but because he's bad as a help defender, he's actually fine as an individual defender. And they got other guys who could be help defenders. I think now much of this relies on Draymond getting back and actually being good again. But, last year he basically was giving up because he's playing next to D'Angelo Russell and a bunch of guys who couldn't do anything all year. And it's also obviously a bet on Steph. I think that there's enough here with this team that if Draymond and Steph can be close to what they were in 18-19, that this can be a team that's solidly over 500. So I guess, I think when we think about our disagreements, I'm trying to narrow down to what it is our disagreement that, and obviously if Steph misses time, they're sunk offensively, but is our disagreement that we don't think Curry and Green are going to be that good, or that the other guys aren't going to be that good?
I think it's probably more about the other guys. Draymond's going to be pretty good, right? I think he'll be very valuable on defense and not that valuable at all on offense.
Yeah.
And Oubre and Wiggins, I think both those guys, I mean, they've been kind of teases their whole career, right?
Yeah.
Oubre played better last year. Wiggins, I don't know. It almost brings me joy to see like another franchise talking themselves into him in year six or whatever it is. He's like the new Jeff Green.
I am glad to see that for like the first time his career, he's actually like gotten stronger. Like that was one of the big things that it was just such a disappointment for me that he just never really seemed to work on his body. And that supposedly, I'm going to see them in person on Saturday. I'll get a little bit better of an understanding from the upper deck, most likely at that game. But
still might be better than their regular press seat there.
Well, I think it may actually be in the regular press seating. But so do you think is that too high in defense that this could be in the 6 to 10 range defensively? Is that maybe what our disagreement is that I'm taking things that are possible and putting that as what I think is going to happen, and maybe that's where I'm going wrong here with them.
I think my slavish loyalty to my numbers forces me into a rationality sometimes when I look at these teams that I have to look at kind of most probable outcomes, and if Wiseman's better than I projected. I mean, I gave a pretty decent projection because he was the second overall pick. I try not to when I do this, I try to just kind of go, okay, the number one pick is worth this much, the number two is worth this much, and not let my own opinions on the guys interfere, because the teams were able to do their own research and came to their own conclusion. So can he be like a mid-tier starting center this year? Like that would help
a lot. They are thin at center, and so yeah, maybe I'm being a little bit too rosy here, but on the other hand, I was way lower on them than anybody else last year, and I ended
That's
up
true.
Being right.
I completely missed the other way last year. I was actually going to ask you if you were concerned about this, that they were getting their asses kicked even when Steph and Draymond were playing.
So, no, I'm not, for a couple of reasons. Number one, in those games, Steph Curry shot 24%. That's not going to happen again. If he's not going to shoot 40%, then yeah, they're sunk if he's just not the same guy. But I think he is. Number two, D'Angelo Russell just completely killed their defense. They knew they were drawing dead as soon as they got him. Those four games at the beginning of the year, the center position, they didn't have anyone. Looney basically wasn't playing, and neither was even Willie Cauley-Stein. Like, they were awful at center. This year, at least, they could put Pascal next to Draymond. He'll play some center for him. I would imagine, that to me might even be their closing group, as Pascal and Draymond at the 4 and 5. They had no shooting on the wing either. They didn't have any reliable shooters. I mean, even when they got Michael Mulder, who probably isn't even going to play this year, might not even make the team, even even though I like him, you know, he just to actually have a guy that you had to fear on the wing, or and Damian Lee, you know, he'll make shots at least. Like they have some guys as shooters that they can mix in with Oubre and Wiggins. Like I actually think that this team for 10 deep, they don't have any just like non-NBA guys. Now, and I do think that some of the younger, more unknown guys could pop a little bit. I mean, they were playing their rotation at the start of last year was basically Russell, Curry, Draymond, and all replacement level of guys, essentially.
Right.
You know, and guys who had no continuity and no understanding, which, you know, that'll kind of be the case again this year. But at least as far as guys having been in the system, they have a lot of new players. But I don't put much stock in those four games at all.
Okay.
So now I put a little more stock in the fact that Draymond really struggled all of last year. But he did have some games where he really ramped it up, like the Houston game on Christmas. He ramped it up and looked really good in that game. So can he do it for an entire regular season? You know, I'm still skeptical about that. But he also was the best defensive player in the 2019 playoffs as well. And so I don't think that that's totally done. And then offensively, I think Steph Curry, I mean, all you need is Steph Curry, right? Like you can have a top 10 offense with Steph Curry and some guys, and they're going to get out and run. They're going to be really good in transition. And I think their defense, they just have enough size and length with Draymond quarterbacking it to be solid. They don't really, yeah, they may not have anyone great other than Draymond, but they also don't have anywhere where you're like, oh, we're just going to go right at this dude. And I think they'll be able to do some switching, which can be really useful in the regular season as well, particularly when teams don't have much continuity. Switching can be really powerful because there's just fewer mistakes that you can make defensively. So that's my thought. You know, I don't know if I'm going to pick them to make the playoffs, but I'm not going to pick them to be under 500. You know, I think they can be average on offense and above average on
defense. Okay.
They are going to suck when Steph is off the floor offensively. I think that's pretty clear. But, you know, Oubre and Wiggins, they can like get by and create some shots. And at least, you know, it's not going to be Atlanta Hawks with Trae Young off the floor levels. You know, they'll be, you know, in the 20s offensively when Steph's off the floor.
Well, Kerr's going to have to stagger because, I mean, Wanamaker is not going to create any offense. No. So.
But I think if you had like Damian Lee, Kelly Oubre, and Wiggins all out there at the same time, I think you could get by against others. But any disagreements with what I'm saying there? Am I just like too happy right now?
It's a reasonable outcome to discuss. I mean, I don't think it's like pie in the sky to say that. You know, we're all projecting off small samples based on last year with these guys. So I think there's a lot of variance in a projection for the Warriors this year.
Yeah.
Versus where some other teams where you have a pretty good idea within a few games where they might end up.
I'm going to have to be real with you. I'm always real with my listeners. Toilet paper doesn't do a good enough job. If you got a foreign substance on your arm, would you just use some paper to wipe it off? No, of course you wouldn't. And so Hello Tushy is here to solve that problem with their modern bidet attachment, democratizing the blessings bestowed by bidets. It's just better. It's a better way to do things. It's incredibly easy to install. It took me like 5 minutes. And it saves as much as 80% of toilet paper use as well. So it's going to pay for itself very, very quickly. Join the millions of happy Hello Tushy customers right now and get 10% off plus free shipping at hellotushy.com/PER. Easy to remember /PER because John invented it. That's hellotushy.com/PER to get 10% off and free shipping. That's hellotushy.com/PER. Don't forget that /PER. Let them know that you came from us. Well, that's interesting that you say that actually here because you and I talked. We didn't have it because it's not out yet, your exact number for the Lakers. But I predicted this season that they were going to win 50 games, which would be the equivalent of 57 over the course of an 82-game regular season. And you are lower on them, correct?
Yes. Yeah. I don't think there's any chance of that happening. For one, I just don't know that they have an interest in winning 57 games for one. Their focus is going to be on the playoffs, and because they have this slog through the regular season and they have to drag a 36-year-old LeBron James through it, where it's a compressed schedule, it's a short turnaround from last year, they're not going to come out with the intensity they came out with a year ago. I don't think there's any chance of that. And then I think there's going to be a little bit more load management and nights off and whatnot too. And I think a lot of the second line players in this team aren't very good. So I think there's the potential for a lot of slippage there anytime James or Davis is off the floor. I do think they help themselves in a way with the Schroeder pickup because it does give them, like playing Schroeder Harrell does give them a viable secondary offense when LeBron is out. Their offense just cratered last year when LeBron LeBron checked out. So I think it's good that way, but it also subtracts the greatest strength of this team was just this hulking defensive presence for 48 minutes. You just felt their size so much. And now you have like 6 foot, you know, 87 pound Schroeder and 6'9", maybe Harrell as a center. It's not the same thing.
So I think that what they're going to do, I talked with Darius Soriano of Forum Blue and Gold for Dunked On Prime yesterday about this. I think that what they're going to do is they're going to play LeBron and AD together more. They're not going to stagger them as much this year. And the numbers with LeBron and AD on the floor last year were absolutely devastating. And yeah, you might get a little bit more Cleveland era LeBron defense, but I think he's also going to play fewer minutes this year. And he also knows that the way that this team won was with defense. That's not how those Cleveland teams won, and that he's going to need to at least put some effort out there. And Anthony Davis is just an all-world defender, and so is Marc Gasol. And when you have those two guys on the floor together, and then you got some decent size as well, I think it's going to look pretty good, regardless of whether LeBron is trying incredibly hard or just, you know, I don't think he's going to fall to the depths that he was at in Cleveland, where he was just like, he was because the problem in Cleveland was he was the best defensive player and the only defensive player on the team those last few years. And so he's just like, I mean, I can't be the guy who's putting out all these fires. He's not going to have to do that. He's just going to have to be competent. So I think they're going to be still very good defensively. And then in the minutes when James and Davis are off the floor, yeah, they're not going to stop anybody, but I think Schroeder and Harrell can give you enough offensively to where they can just kind of play even, and it'll be a crazy offensive pace. So that's kind of how I'm thinking about it. And then I think they've got a lot of depth too. You know, I was surprised to hear you say that you feel like they have a lot of guys in their rotation who aren't that quality. I mean, who are those guys? I think they got 10 deep of totally solid guys here.
Yeah, I still have trouble seeing Markieff Morris as like a totally solid guy, especially if he's not playing a stretch five, which he won't be if Gasol and Harrell are there.
Yeah, I don't think he's going to play that much. So I think I was thinking about this yesterday. He might play more in the fourth quarter than he plays in the other quarters. Like, he might just be in the closing lineup with AD and then just not really play that much, because they were going to want to play Kuzma too. Like, they can kind of like keep him on ice for a lot of the ways, I think.
The other players they have at the 2-3, you know, you're looking at Caldwell Pope, Matthews, Kuzma, McKinney. Yeah. I mean, relative to previous champions, certainly that is not a murderer's row, right? Caruso is definitely one of the best backup guards in the league, so they have an advantage there. And then, you know, Harrell is theoretically the backup. You have Gasol as a starter, though, and you're right, he can still defend at a high level, but offensively, he's gone completely south.
Yeah, they're going to have so much passing, though, on that starting unit. I think they're going to be more than the sum of their parts. And
are they? I mean, without a whole lot of shooting?
I mean, I think if you have Wes Matthews, Gasol, who will probably be, you know, handling the ball from the high post a lot, Schroeder, I guess, is probably going to start. He's been an okay spot up guy. I mean, they were the Lakers were sixth in offense last year before they got into the bubble, and they just screwed around because they had the number one seed wrapped up, which is something that Darius pointed out to me yesterday. So after talking with him and really thinking about it, I was a little bit higher on them. I think they are going to be the number one seed again. The Clippers will have something to say about that too, but I think they're going to be, you know, right at that high 50s level of wins again. I mean, they got two top five players and they got a decent defense. I mean, it's really, I think it's going to be, and, you know, I think they're going to, LeBron and all of them, they're going to take the coronavirus stuff seriously as well, you know, whereas some teams might not. I think that'll be helpful. They've got just a way of playing and a way of organizing around LeBron and AD where these other guys are going to look better than they are. So that's my thought. Because you're really, how much of it is about the quality to you, and how much of it is about you just don't think they're going to try that hard?
It's more the first than the second, but I think the second is definitely a factor. And, you know, I think the thing you have to look at too, I mean, that I always do is, I mean, there's not a lot of injury resilience here if James or Davis misses any time. I just when I look at the third, fourth, fifth best players on these other teams they're competing with, I mean, they're all way better than what LA has. What LA has that nobody can match is that they have the best 1-2 combo in the league by far, and that I think allows them to punch way above their weight in a postseason environment where they both play 40 plus minutes at you know, at their max. But to rack up regular season wins in a compressed schedule, like, they don't really have the roster for that.
Yeah, I respectfully disagree. I think the Schroeder and Harrell, I think we're almost thinking the opposite here. I think Schroeder and Harrell are going to help them a lot in the regular season, and I think those guys are going to be a problem in the playoffs. And I also think, you know, like, like there's, I'm still, they would be my most likely team to win the championship. I wouldn't say they have over a 50% chance of doing it, but there's a lot of questions about the bubble. AD shooting 50% from mid-range. They didn't have to play anybody who was higher than a top 12 defense basically during the regular season. They didn't play anyone who was higher than what, a three seed. You know, they didn't beat another in theory great team, and if Miami was a great team, they sure as hell weren't when two of their three best players got injured in game one. So
yeah,
I think I have more questions about them in the playoffs this year than the regular season, because I think Schroeder and Harrell are just going to be totally solid. We'll see. Schroeder, I'm a little worried about him being the lone quarterback of a second unit. He hasn't really succeeded in that role, but with Harrell there,
well, there's some career year bounce back potential with him too.
Yeah.
And I guess my numbers kind of saw that a little bit too, which is probably why their projection wasn't as great.
Yeah. What did you call it back in the pro basketball prospectus days?
Well, the fluke rule. I'm not sure he's technically a fluke.
Oh yeah, that was 28 or over, right? Like a career high.
Had to be older than 28. Yeah. Yeah.
So guys, talk a little bit more Lakers here, but if you give us some ideas in the questions of teams that you think are being over or underrated, we can talk about some of those quickly in the comments. And I mean, there's also the risk that LeBron James could fall off this year. This could be the year that he's not, doesn't play like a top five player when he's healthy. That's totally a possibility. I never want to pick this year as being the year, but in theory it has to happen at some point. We've never had a guy be 35 or over, or be over 35 and still be the best player in the world. Jordan was the only other guy who's been at 35. LeBron was for last year, but he turns 36 right at the start of the season here.
Yeah, really. I mean, Karl Malone is really the only historical precedent for where LeBron is right now.
Yeah, I mean, maybe you could say Kareem. Like, I think he was like 37 when he won Finals MVP in 85.
He wasn't. I mean, he wasn't their best player though. I mean,
in 85, no, I think he probably was still. Magic didn't really. Wasn't really till 87.
Some of us are old enough to have watched that series.
I mean, anybody can be old enough to watch it. You can watch it anytime you want. It's right there. Right there on film.
Touché.
Were you watching that series? You watched that series live?
Yeah.
I think my first NBA Finals that I ever watched was 1988, I think. Either 88. No, it might have been 89, actually. Yeah, it was 89 because that series is terrible. Built Bar is the best tasting protein bar. No longer must you make do with a protein bar that tastes like a small child took a bunch of sand from the beach, put it in a wrapper, and tried to pass it off as food. The flavors of Built Bar are amazing. Caramel brownie, cookies and cream, cherry barcia, lemon almond cheesecake. Those are the new ones. The classics like raspberry, German chocolate, peanut butter, double chocolate, peanut butter brownie. All these bars are covered in 100% chocolate. They're soft, they're easy to chew, but still fantastic nutritional value as well. Peanut butter, for example, 19 grams of protein, 180 calories, 5 grams of sugar, 5 grams of net carbs. And you can even get a free cooler with purchase while supplies last. Go to builtbar.com and use the promo code LOCKEDON and you'll get 20% off your next order. That's promo code LOCKEDON, the name of this network, for 20% off at builtbar.com. So, all right, let's see if we got any interesting questions or comments here. Scrolling down. These guys will cut. We'll talk Wolves here in a second. Tam Fiege says the Miami Heat are being underrated again this season. What do you think of that?
I'm not sure if I'm underrating them or not. I mean, I think they're a legit contender in the East again. Are they going to have the best record in the East? Probably not, but they're going to be right there. I think there's five teams that can win the East, and Miami's definitely one of them.
Yeah, I had them winning like in the mid-40s, kind of on a 50-win type of pace on an 82 game basis.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's right. The one variable with Miami is that they are set up to do some things in season, especially if they decide to call off the Giannis pursuit, that they are very flexible in terms of the contracts they have, the players they have. Even they still have a couple of picks, I think, they can put in deals. So they do have some flexibility that way to do work in season where maybe Milwaukee is more limited. Philadelphia is maybe a little more limited because of their financial situation. So they do have an advantage there.
Yeah, and I think a lot of it is just comes down to Hero, Robinson, Bam Adebayo. Can those guys get even better? Hero and Adebayo in particular are guys that you might see that from. And also, how much are they going to play Myers Leonard and Kelly Olynyk? Like, are they just going to mess around during the regular season with those guys like they did last year? It sounds like they kind of might. they paid Myers Leonard $9 million for a reason. I still don't know what that reason is, but they probably intend to play him some.
Oh, I thought, no, I actually thought the logic on that was pretty astute. They paid him so that they can have enough salary match for trades.
Kelly Olynyk wasn't enough already?
No, I mean, what if you want Olynyk to actually play in the games for your team? Like, they had enough wiggle room under the tax line that they could basically generate, like, Myers Leonard is a walking trade exception is what he is. Like, that's the entire point of his contract. And it's one they can even take into next summer and use after July 1 or whenever the new July 1 is next summer, August 1, I guess. And use him that way. So that to me was kind of a smart move to use his bird rights in such a way that they would have the financial flexibility this season. And a credit to their owner too, I guess, for swallowing the $9 million to do that.
Yeah. No, I've heard that rationale before. I figured between Olynyk and Iguodala that you probably had enough already. I didn't think they viewed Olynyk as like that critical, but maybe if you're seeing it that way, that makes sense. Okay, let's talk about our next disagreement here.
Okay.
The Minnesota Timberwolves. And I haven't done their projection yet, but it seems like you have them being better than the Warriors, don't you?
I think the T-Wolves will make it to the play-in tournament.
So how are these guys going to be over 500 when they're going to be a bottom five defense? Can you explain that to me?
Yeah, they're going to be a really good offense.
They're going to be a top five
awesome,
offense?
Carl Towns is an awesome offensive player. And I think they have a lot of secondary pieces that are just going to help push them forward. You seem pretty sure they'll be a bottom five defense. I mean, they're going to suck on defense, but will they quite be bottom five? Like, a lot of their secondary guys are like average to good defenders. Their two main players are not. And Anthony Edwards, I think, is still an unknown, to say the least. Yeah. So that... That's an issue.
Well, I mean, I we know what we saw in this tape last year in college, and unlike someone like Ben Simmons, he's not a guy who's like, oh, he has the basketball IQ and he's just being lazy.
He has the physical tools, but he doesn't have. Yeah. But like, I mean, you go a little deeper, like Rubio is a good defender, right? He's going to play a lot. Josh Okogie is a good defender. He may end up starting.
Okay. If he starts, then you're not getting your top five offense that you need, though. Right?
Hollis Jefferson is a good defender.
Again, can't shoot outside of the restricted area, so that's a bit of a... He has a nice mid-ranger, but still. Like,
I actually think you could start him with the players Minnesota has.
Yeah.
You can't start him and Okogie, but my point being that there is defensive talent on this team such that they might not completely suck on that end. I mean, they weren't a bottom five defense last year, even.
Who didn't play for
one game of Russell and Towns together.
I mean the numbers with Towns, I mean, a little of that was bad shooting luck, but the numbers with Towns were atrocious. I mean, like, he is like some of the worst defensive on-off numbers that I've ever seen from a center, especially considering that most centers, just the default at that position is to be positive, and he's like -3 or something in some of these metrics defensively. Like, it was insane how bad it was. And again, but when like Gorgie Jang and Naz Reid are like, you're way better on the floor defensively with those guys than with Karl Towns. I mean, that's not great. I mean, I think I look at this and I think they're going to have two decent defenders in their rotation. One is Rubio, and then whoever, a Hollis Jefferson or a Okogie, is going to play. And, maybe Jarrett Culver will be in there. But your problem is like, all right, you're going to play Culver, you're going to play a Okogie, you're going to play Hollis Jefferson. All right, you might get a little better defensively. You still, your center and your point guard are still going to be awful. Your two biggest stars are still going to be awful. And now you're not that awesome offense anymore if you don't have shooting around those guys.
So I think the key element here, obviously, is that Karl Towns at least has to be mediocre on defense. Like, he has to get somewhere close to average. They were 1-18 in the last 19 games Towns played last year. And, this is a team, like, they started 10-8 last year. Like, they looked like they would kind of be okay. So I think a lot of that was the Draymond effect, shall we say, in in Minnesota, where he, you know, his pilot light kind of went out. And I think he has the tool. Like, I don't think he's destined to suck on defense. I don't think his tools are that bad. He's not going to be Bam Adebayo or whatever, but he shouldn't be a shitty defender.
So let me frame it another way here.
Okay.
They have three guys, I think, who are really have established themselves as like quality rotation players in the NBA, I would say. Rubio, Russell, and Towns. And other than that, you got a lot of question marks. And like guys,
a lot of questions.
Many of whom have even been, you know, kind of replacement level of guys. Now, I'm not going to say that none of those guys will evolve into being good rotation players. Like Wancho, I think, has a chance. Jake Lehman has a chance. Culver maybe has a chance. Edwards has a chance. Jordan McLaughlin probably isn't going to play, but he certainly has a chance to me. Beasley has a chance.
Yeah.
You know, Beasley has been a quality rotation player, but he's another guy who can't stop anybody though. So
yeah.
I mean, I think their most likely starting lineup, John, is Russell, Edwards, Beasley, Hernan Gomez, and Towns.
Yes, I agree.
I mean,
with that.
That is so bad defensively. And yeah, I could see that being a top 10 offense when all those guys are on the floor. I don't see them being top five. Like, I don't think Russell is like that good. And Towns is great, but you still don't have like the elite creation. I think Edwards is going to take a lot of shots and he's not going to make a lot of them. He's going to be a really negative player. So
that's a legitimate concern, I think. Yeah. Is Edwards just going to go out there and light things on fire and get 30 charity minutes a game because he has to, because he was the top overall pick? I think that's a real concern. I have a positive projection in there for him because like he was the first pick in the draft. He might be really good, but there's a lot of variance around any draft pick when you insert them in here, and especially when you insert them with 2,000 minutes or whatever he's going to play. So I think that's a big swing right there is what happens with Edwards. But I think there's enough here to be a decent team. I mean, like, D'Angelo Russell was the lead ball handler on a Brooklyn team that did make the playoffs, right?
I mean, yeah, their offense wasn't any good though.
You saw him at his absolute shittiest last year.
I mean, I watched those other games as well. This is one of the worst all-star selections in NBA history, in my opinion, that all-star year. Well, so here's another concern too. When we did our coaching rankings, do you recall where we had Ryan Saunders?
He was either first or second or not.
First or second from the bottom?
Further down.
Yeah. You just left out a phrase at the end there. So I'll say this.
Wade's team went off the rails last year is definitely a concern that I think reflects back on him. And I do that, but it's an opportunity too, right? Like if they start slowly, I do think there's a chance they make a change.
I'd be shocked. Maybe if they change ownership, then yeah. But no, I mean, this is all kumbaya. Everyone loves each other emotionally. And not to discount that. I mean, it does seem like at least there's a feeling of community within that team, but I don't know how much that leads to winning basketball games. I'll tell you what, do you want to make a bet on whether the Warriors or the Wolves win more games this year?
Whew. Warriors or Wolves bet. I have a very small margin here, so a small bet.
A small bet. All right, we'll figure out what that should be offline. I think that'll be interesting to keep up with. I mean, the Warriors do have some disaster potential, but I think the Wolves do also. Let's see here. Let's got any more interesting comments to hit on? Yeah, a beer when COVID is over. With all the great coaches that were on the market, did the Wolves miss their chance to get a good coach?
I don't think so. I still think there's a guy out there that the Wolves would love to have. I mean, if you connect the dots from Gerson Rose's time in Houston and the G League down there, if you look at Chris Finch, who's now an assistant in Toronto, like I think his name will come up if that job ends up opening.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like though there was just no chance of that happening. I mean, last year was so wrecked by injuries. They finally got their white whale in D'Angelo Russell, and they believe that Ryan Saunders is the coach for all these guys, so they're gonna give him a chance at a real team.
I don't know. I still think as much as there's the kumbaya factor there, I do think there are expectations this year too.
Let's see. Get some more questions here. I enjoy everyone going back and forth in the comments, but it doesn't make for the greatest radio, so I try to find a question. Are the Pelican overrated? That is one that we will get to momentarily here. Colin Buck says, lack of backcourt creation for the Heat. Is that a concern?
For Miami?
Yeah.
Oh, I don't think so. You got Dragic, Nunn, Hero, Jimmy Butler basically operates almost as a point guard. No, I'm not worried about that at all.
Yeah, but the thing that came up when I was talking talking with Albert Namad for mm-hmm. our preview a couple days ago was that if they're going to play Avery Bradley, then maybe that becomes more of an issue. As long as they have one of Dragic, Hero, or none on the floor, I think they're probably fine. But they do have a lot of one-way guys on this team still. That's something that I think was an issue for them, even though they had that wonderful run in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. But I think during the regular season, that doesn't matter too, ultimately. It can be a little tough. You know, Butler and Adebayo, the two best guys, aren't great shooters, so you got to get shooting on the floor. But Duncan Robinson doesn't really dribble that much either. So, I mean, they are very dependent on this whole move the ball from side to side, get guys open philosophy. So, I mean, they don't have, you know, an awesome, unbelievable pick and roll player. That's why Dragic's emergence was so good in the bubble. Like, that's what they really needed that I thought they were missing. But, I think they're in better shape than a lot of teams are, for sure. How about lack of backcourt creation for the Clippers, says Loch Ness 97.
I actually am very bullish on Luke Kennard. I think he's going to help him a lot in that area. I think he's a much better player than Landry Shamet. I thought that was a very important and underrated deal.
Yeah, I think that's right. And they still have Lou Williams also. I think the biggest question is maybe at the very end of games, if you wanted to have someone who wasn't a defensive liability who can also handle the ball so George and Leonard don't have to, that would be nice. But no team is absolutely perfect. I mean, I think aside from that weakness, this team doesn't have a lot of weaknesses other than just, you know, the implosion risk. But I mean, that's why.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's almost nothing you can say. The thing with the Clippers and the Bucks is that there's almost nothing we can say about them until the playoffs start, because we know they're going to be good regular season teams, right? Like, that's not even an issue. So it's just kind of waiting around to see what happens in the spring.
Yeah, I need to think more about the Bucks because I am a little worried about their depth, although I'm probably more worried about their depth for the playoffs because Augustine and Pat Connaughton and Bryn Forbes, those guys are probably fine to get you by with. They're probably not going to be as good defensively as they were this year when they were just like an all-time great defense.
The other reason they're not going to be, I think, is because they're going to experiment more defensively, so they're not just caught playing one style that gets, you know, when it gets shredded in the playoffs, they have no plan B.
Yeah.
So I think there's that. Front court depth, I mean, you talk about them being a worse defensive team when Bobby Portis is the only backup big. That's going to be a problem.
Don't forget DJ Wilson, the savior of Bucks Twitter. DJ Wilson.
He's their matching contract. That's what he is. It's a more top-heavy team, without a doubt, but I still think it's a really good team.
Are we sure the Bucks are still a top three seed this year? Maybe they relax a bit to focus on the playoffs as all pulp OJ, which that sounds awful, by the way. Hate pulp. Yeah. Sorry, man.
They'd have to relax quite a bit. I mean, they have a lot of games to give back before they start losing ground to other teams.
Yeah, I don't think it's as clear cut as it was last year that they're going to be the number one, though, with the lack of depth. I mean, they used to have this 48 minutes of just a 7-footer protecting the rim, and I don't think they're going to be able to be nearly as good protecting the basket this year with their starters, yes, but when they go to any kind of bench bigs, as you mentioned, I think it's gonna start to get, I mean, you look at their main bench guys, Forbes, Connaughton, DJ Augustin, Bobby Portis, I mean, you put two or three of those guys together on the court and your defense is gonna fall off pretty fast.
Yeah, actually, I mean, I think Pat Connaughton's actually a pretty decent defensive player. Torrey Craig's good. Not having Rolo will actually improve their projection considerably by my forecast.
Really? I disagree with that, though. He allowed 46% shooting at the rim last year.
Yeah, but I mean, that was it him? Like, do you really think that was him?
I mean, I think it's part of it if he can just stand right under the basket because they're like swiping in from the wings to, you know, prevent you from taking a mid-ranger and giving up a three on the wing. So Robin Lopez can just stand under the basket and he's still huge under there. I mean, they just, and I certainly think there's going to be a defensive downgrade to Bobby Portis trying to protect them. That's, and I think, you know, especially if they're only going to play Giannis 30 minutes a game, like this group works a lot better with Giannis playing in 40 minutes a game in the playoffs, if Bud actually ever gets him there. I mean, if they play him like 36 minutes a game in a playoff loss and then he leaves this year, I mean, like,
that would be absurd.
Can you imagine if that actually happened?
Yeah. Although, you know what's crazy? I think in that Miami series, they were actually a plus when he was off the floor. Like, it was the minutes he was on the floor where they got their asses kicked.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, that game four that they won without him was a really weird game too. Although part of that was him doing really well in the very beginning to keep him in it. Okay, ready for the Pels?
Yeah, sure. I think this is another team that can be very average. So that's my enthusiastic hot take on these guys. What do you got?
So I think offensively, you know, I would have them below Golden State. I'd probably still have them above Minnesota, I would say. But I mean, I think they're going to be a below average offense. I just think that the shooting is going to just be too much of a problem. Do you see them being an above average offense?
I think they might be above average in spite of their shooting. So much depends on Zion, but they have enough guys who can score. The spacing is going to detract from everybody else. Adams and Williamson don't fit at all. That trade was absurd. I didn't get that at all. Yeah. And they probably don't even gain much defensively between going from Favors to Adams, except just on the health front, like that they'll have Adams actually playing in the games, hopefully more.
I think Favors, you know, is a better defensive player than Adams when he's healthy.
And then kind of like the bench, the deep part of the bench still isn't great. But if they go away from some of these charity minutes they were given to bad players last year, these long stretches of Jackson Hayes or the random Frank Jackson cameo that would seemingly come up every game, I think they're in better shape that way. I think Kira Lewis can potentially help them. I think they have some positives in terms of like their roster isn't optimized right now, but they have a means of trading their way into a better team. If you look at the assets they have and the players they have. Eric Bledsoe, if they're able to trade him and get something, if they're able to do something with Josh Hart, maybe, like, I don't know. I think there are opportunities there. And then, the spacing is a concern with the starting group. I think off the bench, when you come in with Lewis, Redick, and Hart, I think that kind of goes away. I think if Ingram plays some four, the spacing issues get better. Ball is certainly a better three-point shooter than he used to be. So I actually, as I look at it, yeah, I think they could be an above-average offense. I think defensively is more of a question. I mean, they have some, like Ball and Bledsoe are good defensive players. You know, Adams is pretty solid. They actually have some defensive talent. If you look at the roster, they just don't have a ton of quality size. And it's going to be interesting. Like Adams has to stay healthy because otherwise we got Jackson Hayes running around in circles for 20 minutes a game again.
Well, the way that this projection gets beaten to me is that Zion Williamson looks like the guy that he was in the preseason last year. Mm-hmm. And maybe he is just so undeniable, particularly during the regular season inside where teams aren't as focused on not guarding the guys that they need to not guard. I don't think they may not be quite as good in transition this year just because Stan Van Gundy doesn't emphasize that the way that Alvin Gentry did.
Well, they won't be as good in transition offense, but they won't be as ridiculously bad in transition defense either.
No, that's true. I think that's pretty clear to me. Ingram, you do worry that his shooting could take a little bit of a step back from last year just because it was such a ridiculous improvement. I mean, I don't think he's going to go back to what he was with the Lakers, but you know, I think you're mm-hmm. asking a lot for him to repeat what he did last year. Redick could easily break down. I just don't like the fit of this group. Like if you wanted to tell me, all right, you line these guys up from a talent perspective, let's rank who has the most talent 1 through 8. You know, I could see them being a playoff team potentially. But mm-hmm. if you're going to tell me that, you know, Zion and Eric Bledsoe and Steven Adams are all in the starting lineup, I mean, that's just terrible. Like it's going to be so much less than the sum of their parts. And then Zion is so bad defensively. Again, maybe with better health, he could look more like the guy that he was at Duke, but I can't count on that right now. I can't count on him playing more than maybe 50-55 games this year. Yeah. I mean, supposedly there are no limits for him, but we'll see about that. So and you mentioned the lack of center depth behind Adams, and I'm Kyra Lewis, his rookie point guard, I'm not counting on them getting positive contributions from him. Nikhil Alexander Walker, love him, but also another guy who just was terrible last year.
Yeah, he was bad.
So I just struggle to see how they're going to be able to put together effective units. And part of that is just because Zion and Lonzo and Bledsoe, all good players, but also guys who are just hard to fit around. And I don't think that David Griffin did a good enough job paying attention to fit as opposed to just, all right, we're going to get some players who are good.
Yeah. I mean, two things that you really circle with that: trading for Adams instead of Al Horford. Like Oklahoma City had both guys and they make the same salary, right? Like they clearly could have traded for either one. Clearly Al Horford would have fit this group much better. And then putting George Hill into the trade rather than Bledsoe, where George Hill would have fit this roster that he has now much better than Eric Bledsoe does, even if Eric Bledsoe is quote unquote better, as in a vacuum. So I think those two things kind of hold this back. Basically, I think it is playoff talent that will be dragged down because of the fit, but also maybe dragged back a little bit upward because of Van Gundy. And the overall end game is that they're a completely average team.
Yeah, and I see them as a completely average team, maybe slightly above when fully healthy, but I'm just very concerned about Zion injuries in particular.
I had a conservative projection on Zion, yeah, too. But yeah, I mean, if he plays 0 minutes, then my projection's still too optimistic, right? So we just don't know.
I hope that's not the case, because he is so awesome. So Wiz9779, I've opined on this at length, but I thought this would be something that maybe you could talk about. You talked to more executives and were an executive. Why does no one seem to want Miles Turner?
I'm sort of amazed, since they want freaking every other center, right? like they're throwing themselves all over themselves to sign random backups to full mid-level deals, but they don't want to touch Miles Turner. It's really interesting. If he shot a little better, and was a little more of a real weapon when he spaces out, I think that would be important. I thought Caitlin Cooper, is that the name, had a very good article about this on Indy Cornrows, pointing this out. His inability to post up against a switch is a problem. But like he has defensive value, right? And he's certainly can score enough. So I think people don't get excited about paying him $18 million maybe, but I think it should maybe be a little bit more excited than some of these dudes they're paying $10 million. I'm a little surprised there isn't more action on him. I was surprised that Boston didn't push harder to get him back from Indiana in a Hayward sign and trade, for instance.
Yeah, when J. Michael came on my show, he said that the Pacers even were willing to throw in a first round pick and Turner and Doug McDermott in the Hayward sign and trade. And I mean, who knows what the quality of that first round pick was, but that the Celtics still said no, which I mean, that again is really surprising me. We'll see what they do with this $27 million trade exception though. I mean, that they could end up getting something better than Miles Turner with that. So, this is a good one here.
They could end up getting Miles Turner with that too. Wouldn't that be ironic?
Indeed. So who will have a better season, Lonzo Ball or LaMelo Ball?
Ooh, good question. I would say Lonzo this year.
Gotta be.
LaMelo has a lot of rough edges that need to be sanded down. He's really talented, but for him to make a high-level impact this year, yeah, I don't really see that.
No, I agree. I mean, I think he's going to be actively damaging. He had 47% true shooting in the Australian last year. He may well be more efficient for a Hornets team that has some other ball handlers, and I don't know if he's even going to start for them, but you know, I don't see him being good defensively either. I think he'll be better than he was in Australia, but particularly with having not played basketball in a year and a truncated training camp. And Lonzo is an effective NBA player. I don't think LaMelo is going to be this year. Here's a good one. Chard Farley asks, he's basically, his analysis is that there are fewer teams that just seem to be projected to have replacement level of players in their rotation this year. And have we reached a point where the world's NBA talent is outstretching 30 teams' ability to use it? Without really going through it, I kind of agree with his assessment that it seems like there are fewer teams, like say the Hawks last year, where they're just like playing three guys in their rotation who are just well below NBA level. Now, this year's rookies are going to play, and they're all going to be awful, probably, given the circumstances. Yeah. So let's not forget about that. But I don't know. What do you think of that observation?
When I look at my sheet here, I'm trying to see who has like sub replacement or multiple sub replacement guys who are projected for the rotation. And you know, so I think you look at Oklahoma City as one, but it's hard to come up with other ones. Like even the Knicks, I can get to like 9 halfway decent guys plus RJ Barrett. You figure is going to be better than he was last year. I look at some of these. Houston's a question mark, right? Like they could have basically 4 replacement level guys in their rotation, depending on what you think of Boogie. You know, depending on what they get from Jay Sean Tate. You know, there's definitely the potential for that there. Detroit, maybe. I mean, even Detroit, I mean, their guys are like, they're not technically replacement guys. They're just guys who aren't that good.
Yeah. Well, and we just haven't seen injuries yet either. I mean, everyone's healthy, right?
Oh, Charlotte. Charlotte would be the one. I mean, you're talking about going into the year with Biombo and Monk in your top 10. Like, that's a red flag.
Cleveland's got him there.
Cleveland, yes. Basically their entire guard rotation. Cleveland.
you know, Bulls, if they get, you know, if there's an Otto Porter injury, then their small forwards are looking pretty rough, right?
I actually have talked myself into Chandler Hutchison a little bit.
Yeah, do you just like only like not watch any of his three-point attempts or what?
I think he can be the ninth best player on an average team.
fair enough. You know, I think
the, how's that for optimism?
I think the Wolves are to have some questions about some of their guys. I mean, a lot of this too is
Can we talk about the obvious one?
OKC.
Boston.
All right, who's
look at this fucking team after the first six guys.
All right, so who are you saying is in their rotation who's like replacement level? I guess you're saying Teague?
Teague and/or Pritchard, Langford and/or Carson Edwards, Nesmith and/or Javonte Green, Grant Williams and/or Semi Ojeleye. Grant Williams is probably above replacement level. These other guys are either rookies or extremely unproven.
Yeah, that'll be interesting to see, which is and part of why I was surprised that they let Brad Wanamaker go. But Brad Stevens seems to find a way to get something out of his guys usually. I think that's part of it too. If you have really good coaching, you can get better performances out of some of these guys. I'd say the Wizards are another team that might really struggle. I guess it's just, you know, Rui Hachimura.
Certainly if they come to, you know, have a come to Jesus moment about their starting power forward situation. The rest of their team looks pretty decent to me.
Yeah. So it's really a lot of it just comes down to what the injury potential is. I mean, there's teams that are just going to be wrecked by injuries and, you know, then it could get pretty rough. All right, let's see. What else do we got? Is that it in terms of our... Oh, yeah, we got to talk about the Hawks.
Okay.
The Atlanta Hawks.
Are you not as bullish as I am?
I don't believe that I am, no. So my prediction for them, talked about this with Brad Rowland yesterday. I have them with 35 wins. So, you know, that'd be a 40-win team over the course of an 82-game regular. And pretty similar thought to the Wolves, where I don't think they're going to be quite as bad defensively as the Wolves. But, and I'm just not, and I also think that their bench offense, if they're going to play Rondo and Dunn together, might not be that good. And they just, like, I could see the potential where this offense is just absolute all world, but I need to actually see all these pieces together and see them really do it. Like, it looks good on paper, but I'm not willing to put them above, you know, a team like, say, Denver offensively, where you really have established superstars, or Portland. You know, I don't see them being on that level. They could be, but I'm just not ready to go there yet with this group, just based on the names that are there. I want to see how it all fits together.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I mean, if they need to stagger minutes so that Bogdanovich plays with the second group and Chris Dunn plays with the first group, even if they don't start the game that way.
Yeah.
And then they need to, like, I'm interested to see how much Hunter and Reddish actually play, because those guys were, you know, kind of negative players last year too. The other thing with Atlanta, though, I mean, it's not just the offseason. It's the fact that they replaced the worst center rotation in the league with
Clint Capella. I'm not saying they're going to be a 22-win team this year. That's obvious. Yeah, I don't know that I can go that they're going to be over 500. Like, I'm, again, same thing with Minnesota. I'm not 1,000% sure that this offense is going to be better than them.
Okay.
In fact, I'm not even 50%. Sure, because I picked that to not be the case.
Yeah. All right. Okay.
But I could certainly see where you're coming from. This. Oh, my other thought on this too is yes, they are my pick for the eighth seed certainly, but I don't see them as being as good as say the eighth seed in the West. And there's gonna be more inter-conference games than there ever have been before as a percentage of the full schedule. And I think that means that even if they're the eighth seed, I think they're still going to be below the overall median of the league, and so that's why I think they might be a little under 500. You know, if you're comparing them to say Phoenix in the West, one of these eight seed teams, I think Phoenix is better.
Okay. I had Atlanta as the seventh seed in the East, and it's funny, most years I have to after I've done with my projecting, I have to steal wins from the West and give them back to the East because of the differential in conferences and the schedule imbalance. This is the first year I didn't have to do that, so I could just stick with my raw numbers, which is kind of nice.
So Indiana is another one. I think Indiana, I have them as a 40-win team, which would be a 46-win team. That was before this TJ Warren news came out, though. That is very troubling to me, that he's going to be week-to-week with plantar fasciitis. Week-to-week usually tends to be a lot of weeks, and particularly when it's plantar fasciitis, you try to come back.
Yeah.
Like, sometimes it's better to just have the full tear of the plantar fascia rather than the plantar fasciitis, because at least then it it just, you're out and then it heals, as opposed to just being this chronic thing that lasts all year. But he might be their most important player, TJ Warren. Like, I don't, there's nobody else on this team to me that really replicates what he can do from a scoring standpoint. They want to get out in transition more this year, and he's their best defender on the wing.
Yeah, there's going to be a lot of Justin Holiday and Doug McDermott, I guess. It really hampers their ability to play small with Sabonis at five, because they don't have, like, TJ Warren playing at four is the obvious thing they do to affect that. And Holiday's pretty small to play against fours, especially against like starting fours. It's one thing to do it with your second unit. Same thing with McDermott. You know, interested to see what Oladipo and Lamb look like this year in Indy. I have a hard time getting excited about them. I think they're an average team. Will they make the playoffs? Yeah, probably. But I don't know. I think Atlanta has passed at this point.
Yeah, that'll be interesting to see. I like, a lot of it comes down to Bjorkgren too. Do you think, you know, this team was like 20th in offense last year, but in the top 10 in defense, and I think they can get to around that level again this year. But I think if the fall off comes, it's more likely to be on the defensive end. They did get a lot out of these teams defensively, maybe more than their talent would have indicated the last couple of years. So I don't know what the coaching variable of the new Nate as opposed to the old Nate is going to mean for these guys.
Yeah, and the Oladipo situation, I think, is going to hang over them a little bit. It's going to be interesting to see how that plays out.
Yeah, well, I mean, if it hangs over them to the point where, like, he's actually good enough to where it matters, that's probably a good thing, right? Like,
well, that's the other factor. Yeah, yeah.
I mean, he's sure. Just kind of like an overpaid two guard right now. You know, if it gets to the point where it actually really matters, that's actually a good problem for them. Mm-hmm. And then the Rockets, you have them being over 500 still. I guess it all... To me, it's so binary. If Harden is there, then they're gonna be probably totally fine still, and, you know, win over 40 games. If he's not there, then they're gonna be terrible.
Yeah, so there's a lot of variance, right? I just have it based on Harden showing up and then
not doing anything else other than show up.
He'll play. I mean, the way he plays, like, he almost can do that on autopilot. And even if they move him at the trade deadline, like, it makes them worse, but it's not like they're getting a bag of crap back for him. I mean, they're going to get somebody who can actually play if they make a trade with him.
Yeah, I suppose that's true.
So I don't think it necessarily completely craters them beyond what the other moves they've made have already cratered them. You know, we'll see what they get from John Wall this year. We'll see what Christian Wood can do. You still got Tucker there. It's a dicey situation. I think they've definitely, yeah, you can't project them to be anywhere near the levels they've been the last few years, clearly. Like, I think they're much more, even with Harden, they're much more back-end playoff team now. And just where they fall along that spectrum probably depends on how you feel about how motivated Harden will be and how long he's going to be there.
So, I think their defense is going to be atrocious, particularly if Harden plays. I mean, he's just, their defensive scheme didn't make sense to me, even when we thought Harden might be there and playing hard. Like, they got Christian Wood now. Like, they don't really have the personnel. They had DeMarcus Cousins. They don't really have the personnel to switch anymore. And so James Harden isn't going to get over a screen. Are they going to go back to this thing where they switch every time Harden's involved with the screen, but they don't do it any other time? And Harden is going to be supremely demotivated defensively. PJ Tucker is extremely disgruntled about his lack of a contract extension as well. And they're pretty much reliant on his superhuman defensive effort. They've lost Robert Covington. They don't really have any good wing defenders. They don't have anyone who's going to make a play. Daniel House, everyone absolutely hates him after what he pulled in the bubble, you know, to the point where people might not even be like talking to him at this point. This is setting up to be one of the worst team chemistry situations that we've seen, and that particularly seems to manifest itself on defense. So I see them being, you know, pretty darn low in the 20 defensive.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah, I can see that.
And so if that, you know, maybe they do better if they trade Harden, and we'll see what kind of a package they get. But you imagine any package they get is going to be focused around draft picks more than anything. They might get one player back for him, but he won't be as good as Harden. So if I have to pick it right now, I'll have them missing the playoffs, I think. But, you know, maybe we'll get a little more clarity here in the next week or so. And I mean, I guess if he's maybe I'm being too sanguine to say that if he's there, they're going to win 40 games. Maybe as I talk myself into it, maybe that's not. But
I don't know what to expect from them. I mean, I know they're not going to be good. I just don't know how how much they're going to drop off.
Yeah, and John Wall also. I mean, who knows what the hell you're getting from him and how many games he's going to play. They're quite counting on him to be a second initiator. You know, having Christian Wood is another guy who can do something from the center position offensively that they haven't had. So maybe they will be better than I think offensively, even if they don't have Harden. That's possible, but I think their defense is going to suck. Let's finish up with some questions here. We got about 9 minutes left.
Okay.
Do you want to throw some of these in here? Pick one.
Hang on here. Someone wants to know if you'd rather hang out with JaVale McGee or Evan Turner. That's funny.
I'll take Evan Turner. Thanks. I'm more of an intellectual.
All right. San Jacinto Slim. Do you think that the COVID environment will favor the lesser teams this season? If they have an outbreak, they would have likely lost anyways, but a good team can go from winning to losing during an outbreak. I guess that means if they lose good players or whatever. Yeah, it's a variable we haven't dealt with before. I'd say it's similar almost to random injuries that come up during the season, though. I think the whole situation is set up to favor depth, and between the compressed schedule and the fact that you're going to have positive tests take people out, I think deep teams are going to benefit. I think younger teams in general are going to benefit because of the compressed schedule. So I would say that, so I wouldn't say necessarily good and bad teams, I guess. I think it's more a situation where deep teams, it's a situation that favors deep teams. If it's going to favor your Clippers, your Dallas, it's going to favor, not favor as much maybe a team like the Lakers. So that would be my argument.
So I'm loath to make any kind of a prediction on how it's going to affect things. I mean, I think it's just one of those random variables that it would be impossible to anticipate. I mean, there's some thought that those who have immunity, who have had it already, that could be a little bit of an advantage. Although there's no indication to me that I've seen that there's any allowance in terms of the protocols where, you know, if let's say Donovan Mitchell, who's already had it, is a close contact of someone else on the Jazz who has COVID-19, do they say, oh, well, it's fine, you already had it, Donovan, go out there and play? No, they're going to still isolate him just as they would everyone else. Yep. I think that's where the protocols just for isolation are going to be a bigger issue than even maybe people who are getting it, because, you know, people are around each other all the time. You know, it's not like in football, they've really managed to, okay, you're just only going to have contact with your position group, right? Like they're, mm-hmm. they're able to segment things, I think, a lot more. And it's also the practices are outdoors a lot of times in football.
Yeah.
And you're just not having as much close contact as you are in basketball. So I think you could see situations where if one person tests positive on a team, how are you not then having to quarantine everybody? That's my question. So I got to look at I still haven't spent time on the protocols yet. I keep saying I'm going to look at them, but, you know, as you can no doubt appreciate, John, there are a few previews to get to here before the
yes, the season. Yeah, exactly. You know, that's the one real advantage for Houston, though, that if Harden does test positive, he hasn't had close contact with anybody on Houston, so they should be fine.
Yeah, I think he might have actually had the fact that he showed up late to the bubble. Windhorst kind of alluded to that on his podcast today. Yeah. So yeah. It wouldn't shock me, I'll put it that way. So the one thing I will add, though, is do you really want to adhere to all these protocols and have your whole family adhere to all these protocols when you're 13 and 25, or are you just going to say fuck it at that point?
Yeah, that's
when you're a good team and you're trying to maintain things
when you're playing for something. Yeah, it's different, right? Yeah. That's the second half of the season could get interesting that way, especially if guys haven't gotten the shot yet.
Okay, this is a good one here. We haven't talked that much Harden trade yet. Where does James Harden end up? Make a prediction.
Wow. Man, I still like Brooklyn to me still can probably put together the best package. Golden State is an interesting one if they want to get involved. I think they could put together a really good package if they were interested. You know, you could do, because they're in a weird spot right now where they have this incredibly expensive average team. But they could get out of that maybe if they traded for Harden. You know, if you do Klay Thompson, the Minnesota pick, Wiseman, and, you know, maybe a little something on top of that, and turn that into James Harden. Like, do you do that if you're Golden State?
I mean, I probably would. It would be exceedingly weird. I think he ends up in Brooklyn though. Like, that's where he wants to be in theory, and they have the assets, and KD and Kyrie want him there. So I mean that's, yeah, that just seems like the most obvious. And I think maybe part of this oh, he would go to other places is maybe a way to kind of get Brooklyn to put a little bit more on the table so that he can get to Brooklyn. When Brooklyn thinks, oh, we're the only place that he wants to be, there's no leverage.
Then they act like they have over a barrel. Absolutely. Can I throw you my favorite wild card one?
Oh yeah.
D'Angelo Russell, Anthony Edwards, and a future first or something for Harden.
I don't know. I think the Wolves might believe that Russell is better than Harden.
Touche.
I don't know if they'd want to do that. Okay, let's see here. What's the starting five for Charlotte? That's a good one. Grunt asked that one.
A Charlotte question. So I guess Gordon Hayward is probably going to start this year, I think. I don't think he's going to come off the bench anymore.
Yeah.
I'll say the starting five is LaMelo Ball, Devontae Graham, Gordon Hayward, PJ Washington, Cody Zeller. I think Bridges and Rozier come off the bench.
Yeah, it's already been said that Bridges is going to come off the bench. So, yeah, and they did say that Cody Zeller is going to start. There's some talk they might play PJ Washington at five a little bit, but he's clearly the starting power forward. I think the only spot that's up for grabs to me is which two of the three of LaMelo, Graham, and Rozier are going to start.
Yeah, absolutely. And I pretty solidly Graham's got to be one of them, right? It's Ball, Rozier at the other spot.
I mean, Graham is probably the best of those guys, but he also just kind of fits more as an off the bench guy to me, just due to his size. And I think I would like to have Rozier with Ball, because if you're actually trying to win games, which it seems like they're going to, having one good defensive player among your three perimeter guys is probably important. And I think, like, if it were me, honestly, I probably would bring Devontae off the bench. I'm also interested to see what happens with his extension. I mean, now they can sign it during the season.
Yeah.
I'm very interested to see.
Yeah, that is interesting.
Yeah.
Let me ask you this, because you said having a good defender between Ball and Rozier, who are we calling the good defender here?
Rozier is a good defender, particularly when Rozier? He's in a smaller role. Like, especially if he's being asked to do that. I think that's pretty brutal
last year.
Yeah. Well, I think he's still better than Ball, Graham, or Hayward. So
would you start Cody Martin?
Nah.
I mean, he's their best wing defense.
That's true, but he's also just a complete loss offensively.
Yeah.
Okay, let's hit a couple more here. Who's your favorite for Rookie of the Year?
I think Anthony Edwards is going to be in the best situation to rack up a high scoring average. So I'd probably still lean toward him. I think LaMelo is going to be too all over the place and too a little divisive. Wiseman could be it. Like, he definitely is a situation where he could put up some numbers.
Him getting COVID for training camp is a problem, though.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's probably going to be one of the top three guys, though. I think these guys afterward aren't going to be in as prominent roles. If you're looking for a dark horse, maybe Okoro, just because I think he'll probably start all year in Cleveland.
I'm going to go with LaMelo. I think he's just the best of these guys. He's going to be spectacular. I mean, just his style. When he's out there, he's going to put up numbers. And I think he's better than Edwards. He's going to have more opportunity, I think, than Edwards will, because Edwards, he's still playing with Russell and Towns, and he's got Malik Beasley there and Rubio. He could have his role reduced a little bit. Like, it's just more of a mature team. Ball, I think he's going to get some chances. And it's just the good parts are going to be so good. Like, Rookie of the Year voters probably don't really care about what your field goal percentage is. He's going to put up a lot of assists. It's going to be spectacular. Yeah. I think he's historically, compared to like your average Rookie of the Year, he'll be well below that level of production. But and Wiseman isn't going to play enough. He's not going to put up enough numbers. Maybe if he's awesome and the Warriors have a really good defense, you could see it. But I just don't. He's so behind the eight ball now to just have not played in a year and now have missed all of training camp as well. He's going to start very slowly.
Yeah, because he barely played last year. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, he's had even a longer layoff than most of these guys.
So
didn't really talk about Obi Toppin.
That's a possibility.
I know you think he's terrible. He may be able to put up some numbers, though.
Yeah, I mean, there's also, this question is always, well, let me ask you this. This is a better question. We're over time here, but I want to finish this discussion. What do you think, who do you think will deserve Rookie of the Year? I find that's always a more interesting question to me than like what some idiot voter is going to do.
Yeah, I'd still lean LaMelo Ball.
Yeah, no. I, I agree. And I always, like, I will throw in a little bit of, like, okay, who's kind of shown themselves to be the best prospect over this year. I throw that into my rookie of the year analysis a little bit as kind of a tiebreaker. You know, the Joel Embiid versus Malcolm Brogdon debate, I think I'm going to go with Joel Embiid, that kind of thing.
Yeah, right. I really like Onyeka Okongwu, but I just don't see how he plays enough minutes to impact the rookie of the
year.
And
he's missing camp too, this toe issue.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
All right, this was fun. Thanks so much for joining us, and we'll be back next week. Same bat time, same bat channel, 2:30 Eastern, 11:30 Pacific, Thursday. Till then.